Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There is no drama like the Philadelphia Flyers drama. Coots sits on the bench, and the Flyers get the win. And I apologize for jinxing the team. Let's talk about it all right now. It is episode 172 of Orange and Backcheck, and this, as always, is Scott Weinhart and Bill Kornfeld. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Make sure you subscribe to us on Orange and Backcheck on all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of that good stuff. And yeah, at the start of our last episode, or in the middle of our last episode, I said, I'm really not worried about the Flyers because with the rest of the teams that are nipping at their heels in terms of the playoff schedule and going forward, because they're the only team at the time that had a plus goal differential. Then they decided to get blown out by Tampa and Toronto, and lo and behold, they're now a minus five goal differential. So my bad, hand up, my bad. That's on me.
Well, you know what? You got to look at the bright side, though, Bill. I mean, they've scored 206 goals this season, and the closest ones to them in the division are the Capitals and the Islanders. The Capitals have only scored 181, so that's a 25 goal differential right there. And the Islanders have scored 203. But really, when it comes down to it, the difference is that although the Capitals have allowed three less goals than the Flyers, the Islanders have allowed 15 more. So, and that's with Ilya Sorokin, who's a pretty solid goaltender in the NHL. So he's turned out to be a pretty high-end goaltender. And it's even worse, like the Devils, okay? They've scored 225 goals. That's 19 more than the Flyers. But they've also given up 238. That's 27 more than the Flyers. So, you know, given some of the, you know, the circumstances the Flyers have found themselves in, you know, this is the silver lining here is that it could be a lot worse. You could be a minus 27 goal differential like the Caps, or minus 23, or have a potent offense like the Devils and still be a minus 13. So it shows you a lot of how you kind of build a team and how you work around it.
Yeah, I do, despite what the last week or so has been with this team, obviously they got a nice win against Toronto, got a little bit of revenge the other night.
First time in eight games against them.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I didn't realize how long that's been. By the way, the timing of this recording on Wednesday night, we're kind of Toronto fans right now, because they're taking on the Capitals and they're up 1-0 at the timing. So we kind of need Toronto to beat the Capitals to fend them off a little bit. Are you willing to go down that route, Scott? Or are you just kind of like, I'll let the Flyers handle their business because they play the Capitals on the last game of the season?
I'll root for the tie.
Okay, that's bring it back just for this exclusive. Yeah.
Bring it back
moment.
Just for this game. I don't want to see either one of them win. But yet again, a tie, you still get points. So.
Yeah, you still get 1 point.
Shit. Okay.
We need to go to a 3-2-1 system, but that's an offseason discussion.
I agree.
This has been a whirlwind of a week, a couple of days, really, for the Philadelphia Flyers. They've been struggling. They're in a gauntlet of a schedule right now. We'll touch on that, obviously. All against contenders, playoff teams, teams that they are battling with and likely could be seeing in the playoffs come April, May, and June, depending on how far they go. But the big thing is the sudden and unexpected healthy scratch of Captain Sean Couturier, John Tortorella making that decision, allegedly not really. I read Anthony Sanfilippo's piece on the matter, incorporated. Anthony's really good at incorporating news of the matter and his own opinion. And I think that's where he's very good. So it sounded like Torts made the decision, talked briefly with Coots, but it was mostly the assistant coaches talking with him about this. Tortorella sent out the assistant coaches in the pre-interview or in the press conference prior to the Toronto game, and then he refused to talk about it after the game, and that got a little heated there between the reporters. Scott, you and I have been discussing the scratching and unscratching of players all throughout this season. I don't think anyone is shocked by the decision in the sense of this is Torts being Torts. I think what is obviously being the most talked about is how Sean Couturier reacted to this situation. I don't think he was unprofessional. I think it was just a very little bit of an underlying line that he said that he thought would go a little bit under the radar. I don't know why he thought it would go under the radar if he does think that, but saying I'm not a fan of how I've been treated lately here, but it is what it is. I think that is a direct shot at Torts, in my opinion. I'm curious for where you are landing after this and what your thoughts are.
All right, where should I begin with this one? First of all, if you don't know why Couturier was benched, you've obviously never heard of this guy. His name was Herb Brooks. And Herb Brooks played the same kind of game when he was trying to get the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team on the same page. I don't know if you ever heard of him or not. You may have,
I mean, not. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you know what wound up happening with that team. That team, you know, was completely under they were a bunch of college kids going up against a couple Russians, and, you know, they wound up, you know, winning, you know, that game. Not sure how that happened, but, you know, I think Herb Brooks had something to do with it. So that's number one. Number two is it is a great, an absolute great thing that a coach in this city would have the balls to, you know, to bench a guy who they just named captain less than a month ago. So my perspective,
I think it was 17 games. I think it was 34 days, 17 games, something like that, since he was named captain.
So this is the way I look at this. You're in a gauntlet part of the schedule. Like, you are in the most crunch time piece that you're going to have until the playoffs. And you have teams that are nipping at your heels. You need everybody giving 110%. Now, Sean Couturier has never been a healthy scratch in his career. He's come up and he's played around. But this is a different day. This is a different team. This is the accountability factor that we've talked about so many times on this podcast. If you look at Sean Couturier's numbers for the season, a guy who is noted to be a smart two-way player, 36 points, minus 6. He is coming off the back injury. Understand that. This is his first like season back after missing a lot of time. But where he's at, he's at 36 points. He's 6th on the team, which doesn't sound that bad, but he's also has one goal less than Morgan Frost, who's also played in 6 less games. And then also he's got only 3 more points than Scott Laughton, who's played in 5 more games. So Coots has had to take some time this year and, you know, had to have some maintenance days and days that he hasn't played and stuff. I think that people are just overreacting to this quite a bit, because I think this is the bigger message that what Herb Brooks did, like, nobody is safe. Like, nobody's safe from this. And that's the thing, is that if you're willing to bench the captain, and if you go back and you listen to what Mike Ruzioni said, like, it was days before the Olympics, and, you know, Brooks is threatening to cut Mike Ruzioni, who scored the game winner against the Russians. That was their captain, and he was threatening to send him home. And I really just, if you're a professional athlete, you have to look at this and say, you know what, how the schedule has played out lately, if you look at their wins and losses, they've been basically 500 over the last month. You know, they've lost 3 out of 4, and then they win a couple and they lose, drop them. you know, they almost blew the game to the Sharks the other night. I mean, think about it this way. I mean, they barely won that game, and that's a team that they should have easily handled. Now, listen, they had good goaltending playing at night by Magnus Crona, but still, like, that's a game that you got to win. And then you respond with getting blown out, and then you can't handle, like, defensively. Like, there were so many things that were going on. The offense wasn't clicking against the Sharks. Everything fell apart against Toronto a couple nights after. Boston, you had a chance where you were climbing. You crumbled at the beginning of the third, climbed back into it, but just didn't have enough juice to get it done. You're defensively, you're struggling. The whole team is just struggling. This is a good wake-up call. And against a skilled team like Toronto, a game like, you know what? We're going to pull some important guys out of the lineup here, because Couturier wasn't the only one who was scratched. It was also Cam Atkinson. And I forget who else it was, but there was another one. There was another a big scratch there. And you're kind of like, man, like, that's a lot. That's a lot there. But look how the team responded. Look at the penalty that Scott Laughton took in the third period. And then they were only up a goal at that point. He comes flying out of the box, makes a ridiculous move, Tippett fans on the shot, and they still stay with it, and they still finish it out. And even with Toronto pressing late after the late goal by John Tavares, they stuck with it. You know, a team with a high offensive output like Toronto is not going to back down. But this is a team where, you know, they needed to have a sense of urgency, saying, okay, we don't have our guy here. We need to step this up and do it ourselves. That's the mentality that this kind of moved on. This is the equivalent, okay, Bill? If you're talking gambling, this is equivalent to, okay, you know what? I'm going all in and putting all my chips on the table, and you're playing blackjack, and you draw a 2 and a 6. You better hope the dealer busts, maybe, because you're already in big enough trouble. Like, that's the thing. It's like you don't get a favorable hand at all, and the other guy and the dealer's already showing a queen. So you don't have a favorable hand, but the same time, this while this does seem to have an opportunity to backfire, according to some of the things that his agent had spoken about in the Anthony Sanfilippo article, I believe if you look at this from a bigger perspective, this is, hey, look, captain got benched. If I don't start keeping up my game, guys like Morgan Frost, Tyson Forster, Bobby Brink, you know, the defense, they're going to stretch. Like Ronnie Atterd is getting more minutes now. Eric Johnson, a veteran. Mark Stahl, who needs to play better. And granted, it's Mark Stahl, and I know where he's at in his career, but still.
The team looks so, yeah. I know you like him. The team looks so much better without him.
I agree. I agree.
He looks so much better. Mark Stahl is just a body.
He's a veteran piece on a
But now you have team. other presence on this team that doesn't include Mark Stahl that could
but get without you the experience, without the experience,
Mark Stahl could be gone tomorrow, and I don't think this team would miss a beat. But I digress. I don't want to get off that.
I agree. I'm stay on Coots, but like that's the key is that I think this is a motivational tactic that Tortorella had to pull, because if you can't beat Toronto when you start losing 3 in a row, you slip points fast. They've got a gauntlet coming up here where they only play three. I think they have 3 or 4 games against non-playoff teams for the rest of the season. So this is a playoff test. This is playoff testing hockey right here.
Yeah, that's obviously not up for debate. Like, this is the toughest part of their schedule, the most important part of their schedule, given where they sit in the standings. Here's where I continuously, as soon as I start, like, okay, Torts can do no wrong type of mentality, or like, okay, Torts is going to lead this team down to the promised land, whatever you want to say. He does bullshit like this. I don't want to talk about it. He skirts away from the pregame press conference. Look, I'm not asking him, and fans should not be, I don't think majority of fans are asking him to like do a full breakdown moment by moment of how you handled this situation. It's not what we're asking. But if you're wanting transparency and fluidity and just forthrightness with your players, then you should be doing the same in what your profession is. To immediately, first off, you waved off Anthony Sanfilippo again. I'm not answering your question. Great dig by Anthony on this one, going, okay, well, I'm sure someone will ask my question anyway. So great. And then they did. Him continuing to say, I'm not going to talk about Coots. That's between him and I. Yeah, the details, the exact details. Yes, we're not asking you to tell us exactly how you broke it down, how you told him, what his reaction was, because we got that from Coots. We want to hear the other side. We heard the agent side. We heard Kutz's side. What was your thinking towards? Because you're claiming that it wasn't sending a message. He said that in the post-game press conference. It wasn't a message to send to the rest of the team that you're on the hot seat. Everyone's on the hot seat. No one is safe. Well, if that's not the message, then what is, man? What is it? Because we are left speculating, and it can go down a nasty road of losing the locker room, with which, again, the Crossing Broad article addressed. What Anthony did a good job of was discussing how you do this for a championship contender rather than a team that's on the brink of losing the playoffs, or fighting for a playoff spot, I should say, and how that differentiates. I don't know. What did this work? Yeah, seemingly. But let's see how it works down the line, because I just unless Tort starts becoming just as open as he expects that his players are in terms of how they perform, I don't. This is going to wane really, really fast, like really fast.
No
matter the success of the team, and honestly, it's going to translate into less success if it's not.
Less success is what's happening. Less success is what's happening in New Jersey right now. That's sure. What's happening there.
They fired their coach, Lindy Ruff, and all that.
Well, not just that, but that's like, if guys aren't playing up the snuff, you're not benching them. Like, they don't have. You're not. This is a rebuilding team. Okay.
Don't disagree.
They are exceeding expectations right now. Okay. But that does not mean that, oh my God, because they did so well this year, next year they're Stanley Cup contenders. No. No, they're not going to be Stanley Cup contender until they get high offensive talent on their front end. They're not going to be a Stanley Cup contender. They're just not going to be. They don't have enough power, and they don't have enough firepower up front. But that's not the point of this. Look, Tortson is in every right not to say a damn word up there in the press conference. He doesn't want to. He has no. Sorry, he doesn't owe it to the fans.
But does he have a right to essentially, I don't want to call it bullying because I don't think it's bullying, but like just be a dick to the press corps. That's a weird word because that's politics. But to the press and say, I'm not, like, immediately just like kind of chastise them for asking a question about, or trying to ask a question because he wouldn't even let them get it out in full context. Is it not wrong of him to do that, to not even let them address the question, bully them for asking that question? Because that's the question everyone had. Twitter went ablaze when it broke that Sean Couturier was going to be a healthy scratch. Went ablaze.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because they don't get it. You don't get it. Like, flat out, you don't get it. You bench someone of that stature when you're trying to set a message. Torts can sit up there all day and say, it wasn't about sending a message, it wasn't about this. He's not going to talk about it anyway, even if it was. Because even he can't, as a coach, come out and say, oh yeah, I benched our cap because I wanted to send a message to the rest of the team. Because what is that doing? No, because there's more messages that are going on in that locker room, and he's trying to push these guys with 11 games or 12 games left. You say, you better get on your ass, and because if we're going to do this thing, and we're going to go to the playoffs, and we're going to push for it, you've got to be, everybody's got to be on board. This was an absolute kick in the ass to the rest of the team. There's no denying that. But the thing is that as a coach, he can't stand up there and explain every little thing of, I'm not throwing into Torts. I'm not going into it. He doesn't have to. Torts said his piece. If he has anything to say to Kutz, he'll say it behind closed doors. Some things stay in the locker room. Some things stay between coach and player. You cannot expect John Tortorella to get up there and explain every reasoning about what he's doing and all that stuff, especially after a game. He'll talk about things before a game, but after a game, when you're still in the emotion of it, he's already stated that that's just not what he does. And it's not about Sean Couturier fitting here, because according to also the Anthony Sanfilippo, that Torts was the driving force in making sure he was the captain. So that's the thing, is that it's about sending a message to the rest of the team. It's not about one guy. It's about the rest of the 18. It's sending a message to Sam Ersson. It's sending a message to even new guys like Eric Johnson. It's sending a message to It's called Denis Gurianov, who was also a healthy scratch last night, I believe. It's also sending a message to Bobby Brink, Tyson Forrester, Travis Konecny.
That's fine. But again, is it not like, let's go back to Kutz's comments. He was obviously upset by the benching, and he has he has every right to be upset. But again, when he says that he talked a little bit to it about with Kutz, or excuse me, with Torts, he has not been a fan of how he's been treated lately. But it is what it is. Like, raw emotion, yeah, absolutely. I think if you put him with True Serum today, he would be like, yeah, I probably should have handled that better.
Mm-hmm.
But in just like we say when we're in college, drunk words are sober thoughts. Like, what angry words in sports can have a little bit of truth to them.
Yeah.
Is this not a concerning thing that a year down the line, 7 months down the line, 2 weeks into next season, that Torts tries to do this again and the same thing happens where they react that way and it doesn't get the effect that he wants and he completely starts to lose the locker room? Sports teams are very fickle. Especially a team that is, or a sport that is so centered around the team. There is no sport like hockey that is so dependent on the entire team rather than one individual player. Look at Edmonton. They have the best hockey player in the world. Haven't done shit with them. And that's because they're not a complete team. So when you are trying to build that complete team, it's also on the coach's responsibility to keep it together by balancing his disciplinary methods with just kind of letting players play themselves out of a funk. Kutz has been trying to play himself out of this funk all season because he's been getting back from a back injury. He has obviously, as you said, had maintenance days, recovery days that put him on the bench so he couldn't get into a full flow of things. How does this help that?
Well, it takes a moment for a guy to take a step back and reset. Sometimes not playing is the best reset that you can have. Yes, he's had some games off so far this year, but dealing with injury. Dealing with something he hasn't dealt with before, this is a way for Sean Couturier to deal with adversity. Sean Couturier,
it's also his first scratch ever in 13
seasons.
That's
my point.
Yeah.
He's never been scratched before. You're going to scratch me? I'm the captain of this team. I'm like, oh my God, okay. Like, it's adversary. How does he respond to this now? Does he come out with a fire up his ass? Or does he come out and mope around and pout? I don't think Couturier is that type of guy where he's going to do that. But that's the gamble you take as a coach. This is what you have to understand. Everybody takes it on a face value, like, oh my God, he's benching Kutz. What is wrong with this guy? Why is he doing that? They've lost 9 out of their last 15 games. Like, they're not playing well. They're not playing well at all. Like, they're not playing as well as they could be. And there's plenty of factors that go into that. One of them is that, you know, you have problems with your goaltending and your defense. You know, trading away Sean Walker.
Banged up defensive, too. We're still waiting for Drysdale to come back.
Correct.
For Rasmussen Ristolainen to come back.
Correct.
It's been very... But that also lends to what I'm trying to get to, or have been saying. Like, this team is losing not because of poor... This team is all like a huge factor of why this team has been losing is because the lack of a real defensive core. They've been putting it together by Ronnie Adder that you were like,
but they don't have a choice. That's the depth.
That's my point. They don't have a viable defensive core right now because of the injuries that they've been dealing with.
But their depth is keeping them in it, and it's keeping these guys and developing these players. And if you're going to be a part of this team, you're going to bust your ass because we're not going to accept it. Like, they're going to work hard. I think that the message is saying is that when you have games where you lose 6-2, 7-0. Like, those aren't games where you're working very hard. Like, you're not. Regardless of anything, you're down 7-0. Okay, shit happens, but at the same time, you're not playing well. When you lose 6-2, when you're down 6-2 at one point, 6-3, and you battle back to 6-5, you're not playing well.
Yeah.
Look at the big picture. The big picture is a rebuilding team. This is a way where now they have a chance to get into the playoffs. And teams are scratching the door, and they're not taking advantage of it right now, but that they've been lucky with that. The Flyers need to get the ship right before they get to mid-April, because if they're going to get down to the last week of the season, guess who you play on the last game of the season? Washington. You do not want to end up in another situation where you're battling where the last point of the season in a shootout is making a difference again.
Well, so that's the last time that happened, a good run happened after that. So
I understand that, but with a much more talented roster than this one.
Yeah,
and Tortorella was on the flip side of that and saw what happened. So that's the point I'm trying to make, Bill, is that I understand that people are going to get upset. Yes, there's an emotional factor to it. It's Sean Couturier. He's the longest tenured Flyer. He is the, you know, what's it called? He's the captain of the team. He was just named captain. Like, people aren't happy with the way they've played recently. But this is a way to send the message, and you're not going to get the details out of Torts, nor does he owe it to anybody. Regardless of what people they think, he doesn't owe shit to anybody. It's lucky enough that he's even up there for a press conference, but he has to do it for the rules. But at the end of the day, he's going to say a couple things, but he cannot admit that it's to spark the players in the locker room, because then it loses its message. Because now he can't say, yeah, I did it to rally the troops up, and they did a good job. Woohoo! Welcome back, Sean, next game. Because what does that do? All right, we just go back to where it is. No, now it's like, shit. Like, we don't know what he's going to do next game. It wasn't about firing us up. But what is it about? It keeps him guessing, keeps him working hard. The flip side of this, when you talk about next season or the season after, is the message starting to get stale. But you worry about that then. You worry about that then. Right now, you worry about with 12 games left, you got to keep the Islanders off your ass. You got to keep the Penguins off your ass, the Devils and the Capitals. You have four teams who still have a shot at this thing, and you got to fend them off, and you got to win some really tough hockey games against Carolina, Boston, Florida, the Rangers, the 4-point swings for playoffs, like with the Islanders, with the Capitals, with the Devils. You're lucky you got Montreal swung in there a couple times, so it doesn't mean Montreal's going to be a walkover, and neither is Columbus, because Columbus almost beat Detroit last night. They went in overtime. So, again, it comes down to motivating a team. Don't believe the shit that comes out of Torts' mouth when he says this kind of thing, because I tell you what, that message has stayed in the locker room, and this is the type of year where any slight distraction can implode you. So I don't blame him one bit, because frankly, if you're a fan or not, doesn't matter. He doesn't owe you shit, so don't expect him to, all right?
This episode is brought to you, as always, by DraftKings Sportsbook. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. I hope you took the preseason over on the Flyers this year. They were at 75.5, and they hit it easily on March 9th of this year to hit 76 points. I won a little bit of money. Did you? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now with promo code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. The big question is, Scott, obviously, should we strip Coots of the sea now? Is that going to be the next discussion over the next 6 years, rest of the season?
Yeah. And then give it to Lawton until you scratch him, and then you take it away from him and give it to Konecny, and you scratch him. Let's keep cycling it. And then we'll go back to no captain again, and we'll have like, wow, nobody can go talk to the referees. Oh boy.
And then it'll just be Torts. Torts will just have the
Torts
sea.
Will wear the sea.
And then he'll be able to talk to the refs and then get kicked out again. Because that was pretty amazing. Especially on the night that the Tampa Bay Lightning celebrated the 2004 Stanley Cup win.
Dumbest shit ever. But I tell you what, I love Torts for standing up there and not doing that and not saying he's not leaving. I love that.
Those are instances that I will always stand up for Torts. Like, I'd be like, all right, yeah, that's totally Torts. That's exactly what you expect from him. But I do think I've seen people on Twitter put Tortorella derangement syndrome, where they just absolutely hate on him and that kind of stuff. Is there, what's the, because you're a staunch defender of Torts, and I am so mixed on him. Overall, I think he's a positive impact. Like, I think he's like a 60-40 at the end of, like, in my eyes, sometimes 70-30, but like, he has his moments. You're pretty defensive of, or a pretty good defender of him.
Yeah.
What does it take for a coach like him, not just Torts, but like his style of coaching? We talked about Herb Brooks too. What does it take for him to like, just for you to just go, you know what? I think that's it. Like, I think that is a step too far, whatever the case. Like, I'm always curious what it takes for someone in your position who has been a coach, who is a player, to see when a coach has gone, not over the line, but like the message is not going to hit like they're anticipating it to hit.
I don't think it's anything from a perspective of what a coach would say or what a coach would do that wouldn't get through. It's when it doesn't translate to the ice. That's when you know the message has gone stale. Because, you know, like, have you ever heard like a player in the NHL saying, like, after a coach got fired, I'm so glad he's out of here. Fuck him, man. Like, you know, sorry, earmuffs, everybody.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's happened in hockey, but like, you see it sometimes in the NFL. Like, when they make that coaching change, or basketball, they make the coaching change. I mean, look at the Phillies. The Phillies are a great example of that. Like, they fire Joe Girardi and they go on a historic run.
Yeah.
But you can argue that in baseball, the manager is the least important coach or manager in sports.
Well, even so, like, you know, like even with Gabe Kapler and all that stuff, like the complete analytics. But my thing is that I don't think a coach ever me would have me. I mean, you know, like, I would tune a coach out, so to speak. The coach wants me to do something. After a while, I could see how the message could stay out, because it would just not translate to the ice. Like, the message isn't getting through. The motivation isn't working anymore. It's the same shit as usual, you know, that stuff. But that's human nature. Like, you know, like, you get bored after a while. That's really just, it doesn't get through. I think the most successful coaches are the ones that are able to turn that positive message and continue building it from there, which I think that, in my opinion, that Tortorella is very capable of, because, you know, look at his results throughout his career in Columbus, but he also knows it's like, he does have a shelf life. Every coach has a shelf life. But you look at a guy like John Cooper. Like, John Cooper is a very, like, you know, motivating type guy and a very positive guy with his team, and he's been there a long time. You know, before, you know, all the things went down with the Blackhawks stuff, Joel Quenneville was the same way as well. You know, you have those guys who understand, you know, what they need to do to keep their team motivated and keep going. And those are just two examples I think of off the top of my head. God. But then you have
Joel Quenneville. We haven't mentioned that name in a while.
Reason I mentioned it is because look how long he was there for and the sustained success. Yeah, no, they have. I'm just thinking, like, point I'm making.
You remember, like, when he was about to be fired by the Blackhawks, the butterfly effect that the Flyers could have had. Imagine if they did hire him instead of Alain Vigneault at the time. Yeah. What would have happened to this franchise after that?
With that, then Carter Hart all in the same couple of years, it would be a black eye on the franchise, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I look at it this way, is that with Torts, this is what the franchise needed. It's not so much the team itself. You have to build the team up. He's developing the talent mentally. I don't know if Torts wins a cup here. I don't know.
And he actually self-admitted that.
Yeah, I think he knows his role here. Like, he knows, like, he said he spent 1 year too many in Columbus. And it showed, because the year after, they plummeted. Like, he got the best that he could out of that group. And I think he might have been, you know, 1 year too long in Tampa as well. You know, a shelf life for a coach is really like 4 years or something. Look at Peter Laviolette. I think Peter Laviolette's one of my favorite coaches I've ever seen, because I just like the way he has his team, the way he motivates his team, the way his teams play with their forecheck. I absolutely love that style of hockey. But look what happens. That message got stale during that lockout season. They should have made the move in the summer, and then three games into the, you know, the season in 13-14, he gone. So, you know, it's I think that with coaches, it's hard to say, like, unless the on ice product isn't quite there anymore, then that's how you do it. I can wholeheartedly see a guy like John Cooper becoming available in the next 2-3 years. Look, Tampa's, they're getting old. Like Stamkos is getting older. Hedman's getting older. Like Vasilevsky's not getting younger. He's good, but that team has had a lot of years where they've had traded away stuff for, you know, to get rentals to try to get over the top. And they've gotten two Stanley Cups out of it. But the key is this, is that Torts is going to build the foundation of this team and rebuild the franchise identity of this team. And it's going to take a guy, someone else, to come in and get him over the top. It's not often that you see the guys who were doing the rebuild actually get it across the finish line. One of the few instances is probably Jared Bednar out in Colorado. But other than that, you know, name me a situation where a guy has come in when the team was awful and then they take him to the promised land. But again, you don't have a Nathan McKinnon like Jared Bednar had in Colorado. You didn't have the young amount of talent and build around and a GM like Joe Sakic building around at that time around a core piece like Nathan McKinnon, who's a elite talent. A little harder to do for Torts, but at the same time, like, when's the last time you saw a rebuild and a guy take it to the finish line? Jared Bednar is the only one I can really think of.
In hockey, yeah, it's hard, but could you argue Howie Roseman here in Philly?
I could say Roseman, obviously, because he's been there for a very long time.
He's been there forever. He was an intern, and then he worked his way up, and he was...
But I'm not talking about that. Yeah. I'm not talking about a guy who's like worked up and spent years with the organization in that sense. I'm saying like as a coach behind the bench in the National Hockey League. Jared Bednar's the only one because, listen, Patrick Waugh left. They're like, okay, well, who are we now?
They didn't win it under him, but still those years under Andy Reid from 99 to 2011 are still some of the
football's
most successful. That's why I was saying, like, I can't think of anything in football or in hockey, but other sports for sure there are instances.
Mike Tomlin. I mean, rebuilt the whole Chiefs and rebuilt the Chiefs.
But again, that is why hockey is so different than all of these sports. They're so predicated on not just a coach, not just a single player. It is reliant on the all the gears and whistles and all of the stuff being well lubricated and working in unison without much of a hiccup. And that's the GM is one gear. The coach is another. The players are another. Like it's all a system. You can argue like every player, every coach, every hockey team is a system. It's not one. It's not an individual thing. It's an entire system where these players are system players and they just have to adapt to whatever system is presented to them at a given season or a given year.
Did you know, by the way, I don't think you know this, but I listened to this book not too long ago. Yes. Listen to the book. I used audiobook.
I don't retain books for as much as I'm an audio guy. Like I've been in radio for 10 years, podcasting for another two, like never got into audio listening.
I also have a 45 minute drive to work. So I have a lot of time.
Yeah, that's true. I have a 30 second. I come downstairs and I
yeah in your pajamas and you put on headphones. Nice job, Bill.
Goddamn right I do. God,
lucky bastard. But anyway, I listened to, you know, Mike Sullivan, the coach for the Penguins.
Yeah.
He was Tortorella's right hand man for a long time through New York and everything like that. And he actually took a job in the AHL and went back in order to work his way back up to the NHL. And he came up with the Penguins and took over and then won the cup with them. Back to back cups. But what my point is that I don't think he was the one to start out the season there, if I'm not mistaken. But even so, like you think back, like when the Penguins won, they had Michel Therrien, and then, you know, we fired him and then brought in Dan Bylsma. And Dan Bylsma had 20 NHL games experience before they were going on a playoff run with the Penguins. Peter Laviolette in 2009, 2010. John Stevens was the coach of that team to start, and then Laviolette came in after Stevens was fired. A lot of the guys where you go on runs and stuff like that, you know, there's coaching changes. There's things that, you know, that occur that happen. Like, so I think that in the NHL, it's very rare that you have a guy going from when you rip down to the studs to come all the way back and hoist the cup over your head. Tortorella did it in Tampa Bay. He did do it there, but he also had Vinny LeCavalier, Brad Richards, Martin St. Louis, a solid defense, excellent goaltending with Nikolai Habibulin. There's a lot still to be desired this team because they're still a young rebuilding team. Now let's fast forward this, not next year, because I think I'm not going to get into next year right now because I got to see how they finish up this year. But not next year, but let's look the year after that. When people say, you know, in about 2 years, okay? 2 years, you're looking at Michkov coming in, okay? Who plays the middle with him? Where else are you going to be adding talent at? You know, what's your defense going to... Things change so fast, but at the same time, you're hoping that guys like Bobby Brink, Cam York, Tyson Forrester, you know, Owen Tippett, all these guys get better and better and better, and you build like a team and you become consistent like a team like the Rangers or Carolina.
Not even that. You also just kind of want to, at this point, I'm sure they were already considering this, but like they got to also look into big name free agents are going to start coming out there, or big trade acquisitions. Like
that's the key, the trade acquisitions.
You can homegrown all you want until the cows come home, but like you reach a certain point when you're in contention. And realize that you're contending team for the cup, that you have to go to outside sources. And that's where trades happen. That's where acquisitions happen in terms of free agents. So, like, can't all rely on homegrown talent as much as, like, at the Phillies, 100%. All of these teams.
And you know me, I've always maintained that there's not enough player movement in the NHL anymore. There isn't.
Yep.
And it would be great to see, like, a massive trade for our Flyers to go out and get an elite talent. But then the other question comes up. How much are you giving up of your team to be able to acquire that talent? And of course, that's the age old question. So like when I look at this team and I say, is Torts like, you know, the guy to lead him to the promised land, I don't know if he'll just have enough runway to do it like that, to go back to my original point, because I just don't think that the moves that they want to make are before his plane takes off that they're going to be able to do. I just, not next year, because this team will not be ready to compete for a cup until at least 2026. At least 2026.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Like, and I'm saying least 2026, because you got to see what happens with Michkov. You got to see what other talent is out there. And when you're talking about elite talent, 2 years from now, a guy like Mitch Marner is going to be a free agent. What do you do with that? Do you go after a guy like Mitch Marner? Is he a real difference maker? Personally, I'm a huge fan of Mitch Marner because he plays in all three phases of the game. But do you have that in Travis Konechny already? Like those, and when those guys become available, or like, you know, maybe they're going to trade for like a William Nylander. Is Nylander an elite talent, or is it because he's surrounded by elite talent? So like, and I can't believe I'm using Leafs as examples for this, but that's the best thing that I can do because of the talent wise. Hey, look, you know, Steven Stamkos might be available. Is Steven Stamkos at 36 the same at 30? Like, you're talking about elite talent. There's becoming less and less and less of it because the talent's so watered down. So, I mean, you're going out and to get a top guy. They don't grow on trees. They're going to want the farm. So that's a question that we have to answer probably a year or two from now. Like, hey, who might be available? Who might be available for trade? Especially when the cap is going to go up big time. Is Connor McDavid going to be available? I don't know. Is Austin Matthews going to be available? I don't know. I mean, what are you going to do? Sidney Crosby's probably going to be close to retirement. Malkin, Ovechkin, all those guys. Those older names are going to be out. Who's the next step? Who are the guys who could be the names? Like, who are those guys? That's where you're at, not just at the Flyers, but in the league. And I know I'm going on a complete tangent. People are probably like, what the hell are you talking about right now? The point I'm trying to make is that Torts is not their problem, not the issue. Torts may not also be the solution, but Torts is exactly what is needed at this time in this stage, and it's going to set them up to make moves down the line, because once you rebuild that identity and rebuild that culture, then people are going to start wanting to come back here, and you're going to have it where it's like, hey, get back in the heydays in late 90s when you can recruit guys like Jeremy Roenick and John Van Beesbrook and get good players in here and have a good consistent core for a long time. So, but until you have, yeah.
I mean, you're already seeing it with the fan returns. Like the attendance is upticking at a rate that I didn't anticipate this season, and it's a good thing. And that's exactly what
because they're winning.
Seeing.
Plain and simple, they're winning.
Yep,
they're winning, and so. they're fun to watch. Win or lose,
yeah. Overall, they're a very fun team to watch. Would have been funner if they had Coots in the lineup, but hopefully he's back for Carolina
Jesus
this week.
Christ,
I just had to. Bill. I knew that last little dig. There it is. All right, that's gonna do it. Episode 172 of Orange and Back Check. Thank you so much for listening. What were your thoughts? Will we see Coots return to the lineup Thursday night against Carolina? I think we do. I think this is a one and done. Well, not a one and done, but a certainly one game and then come back and then we'll see what happens. 13 games left, 69 games played. Wow. We're already out to the end of the season.
Nice.
Do they hold on? Very well done. Do they hold on to this playoff spot? The Tampa Bay, or I keep saying Tampa Bay. I'm having trouble with my T's tonight. Toronto's up 4-2. Looks like they're challenging for an offside, so we'll call it 4-2 for the time being. Against Washington, which is a good thing for the Flyers in the standings, even though it breaks Scott's heart to be technically hoping for a Toronto win. Thank you so much for listening.
Third in the division. I really don't care. the Flyers don't have to see that. They're going to have to, now it's a sidebar, they're going to have to let it play Boston in the first round. They can't beat Boston. They cannot beat Boston.
Nope.
They can't beat Boston. Actually, I'm sorry. They're going to play Florida. Excuse me. And so if Florida takes them over, they're going to want to play in Boston. So go Panthers.
Yeah. Thank you, as always. Make sure you subscribe to us, following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all that good stuff. Should I start saying an X? Nah, fuck Elon Musk. I don't give a shit. Twitter, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, we'll see you out there on the ice.
Why the hell would you name something like X? It sounds like, oh, it's a porn thing.
It's exactly what it is.